This is In the News for December 6, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. The first story today is from NTI.org, or NuclearThreatInitiative.org. Dated Friday, December 2nd, U.S. Command declares global strike capability. This is by David Rupi from Global Security Newswire. Dateline Washington, the U.S. Strategic Command announced yesterday, which would be the 1st of December, it had achieved an operational capability for rapidly striking targets around the globe using nuclear or conventional weapons after last month testing its capacity for nuclear war against a fictional country believed to represent North Korea. In a press release yesterday, STRATCOM said a new Joint Functional Component Command for Space and Global Strike on November 18th quote, met requirements necessary to declare an initial operational capability, end quote. Requirements were met, it said, quote, following a rigorous test of integrated planning and operational execution capabilities during Exercise Global Lightning, end quote. The annual Global Lightning exercise last month tested U.S. strategic warfare capabilities, including the so-called CONPLAN 8022 mission for a global strike, according to publicly available military documents. CONPLAN 8022 is, quote, a new strike plan that includes a preemptive nuclear strike against weapons of mass destruction facilities anywhere in the world, end quote. That was from Hans Christensen, a consultant for the Nuclear Resource Defense Council. Christensen first published the STRATCOM press release on his website at nukestrat.com. That's NUKESTRAT.com. Military analyst William Arkin, in a column on the Washington Post website in October, wrote that the classified exercise involved a response to a radiological, quote-unquote, dirty bomb attack on Alabama by the fictional country Purple, or allied terrorists. According to Arkin, quote, in the exercise, Purple is a Northeast Asian nation thinly veiled as North Korea, end quote. Major Jeff Jones, STRATCOM spokesman, said today that the exercise incorporated various scenarios and added, quote, everything is fictional that we put in the exercise, end quote. Global Lightning employed command and control personnel, according to the STRATCOM release. Global strike attacks could be launched from U.S. long-range bombers, nuclear submarines, or land-based ballistic missiles, according to the STRATCOM website. Again, you can find more on this article and other issues related at nti.org. If that doesn't give you the eebie-jeebies, let's move on to the second story here today. This is from Interpress Service News Agency at ipsnews.net, written by Marty Logan. It's out of Nepal. King cornered by Maoists and political parties. Communist Party leader Bamdev Gautam was hustled into a cafe to avoid skirmishes with police Friday as King Gyanendra motored past with an army escort, but it seems Nepal's political parties have gained the upper hand during the monarch's three-week trip outside the country. Midday on Friday, tens of thousands of people poured into the streets for the largest yet opposition rally here since the king seized power February 1st. Gautam, a senior leader of the mainstream United Marxist-Leninist or UML wing of the Communist Party, looked happy in the nearly empty restaurant where employees downed and reopened shutters repeatedly as riot police with bamboo canes charged at crowds of youths who ran from the street towards the cafe and then retreated to regroup. He estimated the crowd at 75,000 people, while observers from a local human rights group suggested 30,000. It's only a beginning, Gautam told IPS. He said, quote, we are happy. We have only one aim. We have to isolate the king. It will take a long time, but we are ready, end quote. Two recent events may have started that process. One is the ceasefire call by Maoist rebels 3 months ago, which they extended for another month just hours before the monarch returned Friday. The other is the 12-point understanding between the political parties and the insurgents, long rumored and finally announced late in November. The pact is supposed to lead to elections for a constituent assembly that would draft a new constitution for Nepal's young democracy, and finally, two multi-party parliamentary elections which have not yet been held, which have not been held there since 1999. King Gyanendra ascended the throne in 2001, after then King Birendra and all immediate members of his family were killed in the royal massacre in October 2002. He dissolved parliament and appointed a government, and then 10 months ago, He fired it and had Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Debre arrested on corruption charges. While Nepal's political parties and rebels have stayed in contact during the decade-long Maoist uprising that has killed more than 12,000 Nepalese, mostly innocent villagers, local politicians have been favorite targets of the Maoists in rural areas. After February 1st, when an alliance between the two sides appeared possible, government officials warned that the parties could also be branded quote-unquote terrorists for cooperating with the rebels. But in recent weeks, local media have reported numerous incidents of villagers attempting to join pro-democracy rallies led by either the political parties or the Maoists. For more on this story, go to Interpress Service News Agency at ipsnews.net. Again, that was written by Marty Logan of Interpress Service News Agency. Up next, from the New Standard at newstandardnews.net. Banned e-voting machines specially okayed in North Carolina. This is by Brendan Coyne, dated December 5th. In what some groups are charging as an illegal move, the North Carolina Board of Elections certified voting machines made by three companies which had previously admitted they could not conform to new state requirements that computer code be accessible to elections officials. The board's move came just days after a state judge voided a temporary exemption from certain portions of the elections regulations granted to Diebold and told the company that it must comply with all provisions of the law. Friday, the public interest advocacy organization Electronic Frontier Foundation charged that the elections board, quote, simply flouted the law, end quote, in approving applications by Diebold, Sequoia, and Election Systems and Software to sell equipment throughout the state, despite admissions by all three that they are unable to place their software codes in escrow as required under the October rules. EFF attorney Matt Zimmerman said in a press statement, quote, in August, the state passed tough new laws designed to ensure transparency in the election process, and the board simply decided to take upon itself to overrule the legislation. The board's job is to protect voters, not corporations who want to obtain multi-million dollar contracts with the state, end quote. North Carolina's certification of voting machines came about despite widespread and well-documented problems with the systems in the state and elsewhere. During the 2004 elections, e-voting machines in a single North Carolina county lost over 2,500 votes. CNET News reported this. A number of organizations in the Government Accountability Office found voting irregularities in Georgia, Ohio, Virginia, and elsewhere in elections this year. Most of the machines involved were manufactured by the three companies North Carolina certified on December 1st. The companies maintain that contracts with third parties for the computer source code prevent them from placing them in escrow, where public officials can access the code in case of new lost votes or other voting problems. Diebold spokesman David Baer told CNET, quote, we don't know how we'd provide source code for Windows CE or whatever third-party vendor it may be. It's like buying a computer at Best Buy. You don't own Microsoft Word. You license the use of it, end quote. Again, that's from the New Standard at newstandardnews.net. Check them out. I suggest it for great independent news source. Check them out. Our final story today is from High Country News, their latest issue, dated November 28th. It's titled, Public Lands Agenda Turns More Radical and Urgent. It's written by Michelle Burkhart of High Country News. Representative Richard Pombo, Republican of California, continued his crusade against environmental regulations in November, tucking provisions into a budget bill that could lead to a massive public land sell-off. The proposal, masterminded by Pombo and Representative Jim Gibbons, Republican of Nevada, would put as many as 350 million acres up for sale, including parcels within national parks and wilderness areas. The provisions may be pulled from the bill before it goes to the president for approval, but the fact that Pombo is pushing such a controversial proposal now may shed some light on Republican leaders' strategy at a time when more subtle policy shifts have been knocked back in the courts. Roger Flynn, director of the Western Mining Action Project, said, quote, this is the far right's granddaddy of all land grabs, end quote. The provision would lift an 11-year moratorium on mining patents, once again allowing mining companies to buy public lands. It would also eliminate a long-standing requirement that mining companies prove that there are valuable mineral deposits before they stake a claim. That means that, for the first time, oil and gas companies, real estate developers, casinos, ski resorts, anyone, could file a claim and buy public land. Flynn also said, quote, the only limit is the size of a purchaser's checkbook, end quote. Most national parks and wilderness areas which are officially protected from new mining claims, would be immune from the proposed rule, but Joshua Tree, Yosemite, North Cascades, and Death Valley National Parks all have claims that predate the park's creation, as do some wilderness areas in Colorado. Those lands, too, could end up on the auction block. The House approved the budget bill November 17th, but some observers expect the Senate to reject the mining provisions. Again, that's from High Country News. You can get more on this article. It's a longer article than this, written by Michelle Burkhart at hcn.org. This has been In the News for December 6, 2005. I'm Scott Bergwin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove. I'll talk to you next time.